Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
I just continue to be shocked here, Don, by the stories that just are becoming so commonplace. Kevin Spacey came out just about a week ago with an apology to Broadway veteran Anthony Rapp for alleged unwanted sexual advancements when Anthony was a minor, a young teenager. The details, I have to tell you, to be quite frank, anyone listening, were atrocious. And where they say that Kevin Spacey, I can't even go into detail because it's just too much to say on air, but the sexual advancement was so blatant and so shocking to a young teenager. And Kevin Spacey's response and his apology, he doesn't even know if it happened or not. And he's not surprised.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't deny it. And indeed, his defense boiled down to this. I'll actually read it, but let me paraphrase it quickly. I was drunk and I don't remember it. Oh, and by the way, I'm gay. That was his first defense. Now, to the credit of many of those with same-sex attraction out there, they were aghast at this too, but I want to dig down. Here's what he actually said on Twitter. He says, I'm beyond horrified to hear his story. I honestly do not remember the encounter. It would have been over 30 years ago. But if I did behave then, as he describes, I owe him the sincerest apology for what would have been a deeply inappropriate drunken behavior. And I'm sorry for the feelings he described having carried with him all these years. Later in the statement, he says that these allegations have encouraged me to address other things about my life. Now, this is interesting, and this is where we're going to camp here a little bit, I think, Timory. You might think, oh, it's encouraged him to think about other things in his life, like whether or not he's going to molest people unwanted when he's in a state of drunkenness that he can't even remember. You'd think maybe that would be the first thing that you'd want to address. No, this is what it caused him to address. He says, I choose now to live as a gay man. And you might think, well, hold on. What does that have to do with anything?
He's choosing to publicly live as a man who has same-sex attraction now versus before it was covered up, it wasn't discussed. Who else? Who knows?
Is that what it means? I wasn't really sure because I think he's had relationships both with men and women over the years.
So he's fully
acknowledging. Does this mean he's going to, like, he just acknowledges that? And I don't even know, frankly, what all that entails. But it's interesting to me that his response to saying this has encouraged me to address other things about my life. What he's referring to there is this charge of molestation of an underage boy. That's what the charge is. Sexual assault of an underage boy, a 14-year-old boy. Where I live, that's assaulting a minor, all right? That's not something that I think, oh, well, what other things about my life other than the fact that you assaulted a minor are you thinking about? No, it's the homosexual aspect of it that he points to, which is a little bit interesting.
I'm going to break this down for a second, too, from a different perspective. I've done a lot of work in PR. I have worked behind many nonprofits behind the scenes. I have worked, and I love public relations. And in school, when you're studying public relations, one of the big things that you have to understand, both in the field and in looking at it from the outside, is what story are they trying to spin? This man has a PR person. They're trying to spin a story. What are they doing? They're taking the focus off of the sexual abuse of a minor. Yes, they are apologizing because he had to apologize. But they're also going, let's make a bigger story and distract. I'm coming out as gay. So now instead of focusing on this poor person who is sexually abused, they're now focusing on him.
Well, but what aspect of him? This is what I'm trying to, like, you might say I was an alcoholic And like, I can see that, right? Like, I was an alcoholic. I couldn't control my actions. It was terrible. I'm going to rehab. In fact, Harvey Weinstein went to rehab for about 3 days, not even 3 hours.
Recently?
Yeah. He was in and out. Because, same sort of thing, right? Well, how am I going to spin this where it can be, you know, maybe if not excused, at least understood, right? Like, I'm a sex addict. I have this addiction. Therefore, I'm going to go get that worked on. Now, Spacey didn't do either of those things. But what he did do was say, I'm gay. I have same-sex attraction. Now, I think you need to see the broader picture here that maybe not all of the culture is aware about. That's kind of why we want to talk about this story today. But within the gay community, there is a long-standing and well-understood culture where young men and older men get together, often for the younger man's first sexual experience. That is very well attested and very much accepted within the gay community. It's hard for me, when I first read that tweet, it's hard for me not to think that the PR people or whoever, or just maybe Spacey himself, is thinking, oh, well, the homosexual community will understand this. And I'm gay. So it was okay.
And now, I don't remember. I don't remember.
Now, again, like I said, to their credit, many people with same-sex attraction representing the gay community came out and said, listen, let me be clear. Being gay has nothing to do. In fact, Esposito, comedian, said that. He's like, hey, being gay has nothing to do with going after underage folks. But here's the thing.
But your lifestyle supports that.
Well, here's the thing. It actually does. And this is what I want to get into, some of the actual facts here. So please be warned. This is not a pretty subject when you start getting into the underbelly of the gay culture.
But you know what? I'm going to ask you guys to do something. If you're in the car with young ears, you know, come back, listen to the podcast later. Yeah. Save the podcast for later. You guys really do need to hear this. I have to tell you, as I was working, prepping for the show this morning, my stomach was just, I'm just praying. I had to get up, I had to walk away, come back to it. But this is what is happening. And if we sometimes don't understand fully the context, the circumstances, the impact, we, I think, don't always have the ability to relate and converse in the same way. We need to have a strong level of empathy. There's a just element of judgment here, of course, but we have to have a strong element of empathy. We need to understand what's going on. We need to call it for what it is, and we need to work on the issue.
Yeah, that's absolutely, Timmy. I mean, that should be our main thing, is that we need to see the homosexual lifestyle in a similar way it's not a moral equivalence, but I just want to get our mindset in the right way, to a smoking lifestyle or a heavy drinking lifestyle, where we say, in our culture today, we don't necessarily come, well, maybe smoking we do, or sometimes even overeating, but we don't come at those people first and foremost with a big judgment. We say, let me help you. You're stuck into an unhealthy situation. Let me show some empathy and let me try to, one, keep you from entering into that lifestyle. And two, if you are in that, let me come alongside and try to help you out of it. Unfortunately, what we're doing is we're like in the 50s, before people understood what smoking was all about. They're like, hey, this is awesome. This is so healthy. We encourage people to smoke. You know, all of our newscasters are smoking on air. It's like, this is the greatest thing. This is the key to happiness. A lot of times we're telling our kids, oh, if you have some sort of inclination, oh, yeah. Celebrate that. That's a cause for happiness. When in reality, what you're doing is initiating them into a very, very unhealthy lifestyle that's going to cause a lot of damage. That's why we bring these stories up. It's not to say, you know, you people are going to hell. That's a good starting point.
And I do have to say, you know, when I was reading this morning, I have a lot of family members who experience same-sex attraction, some of whom have had lifelong partners, some of whom's lifelong partners have died and been mourned even within the family. And, you know, to see, you know, I do have to ask the question in my own mind, and this is tough to say out loud, but I know that the same-sex acted upon community, that it is very common to have sexual relations with minors. I don't know whether or not people I know in these communities have had these relations, but it is so common that it does have to be a question. There does have to be a level of barrier with these people. So I understand some of the LGBTQ groups coming out saying, hey, that's not a part of how we're living.
Right.
You know, we're just struggling with same-sex attraction. But then you have other people who this is a daily part of their lifestyle. And I'm sorry, I'm laughing at the fact that the LGBTQ groups going, hey, man, why are you saying this? Don't come out saying that. They're so upset with Kevin Spacey, in part because he's exposing it by outright coming and saying, yeah, I don't remember if this happened or not. I was drinking, but I'll tell you now, I am gay. You know, this is something that was a normal occurrence for that type of lifestyle.
Yeah, that's right. That's the only way that tweet makes sense.
Yes.
Right. That's the only way that tweet makes sense is if it is something that is a well-known and accepted part of that lifestyle. And here's the thing. It is. Okay, it is simply a fact that the father-son dynamic, which is something that, if you want a good resource on this, I encourage you to check out Joseph Chambra's stuff. He is a man who has lived for years and years with same-sex attraction and came out of that lifestyle, and he's very open and clear about what it's like and what happened to him, and he has a lot of online resources, a very good writer. He's got an interview on the Patrick Coffin Show not that long ago as well. Good guy. He actually also plays player for Joseph. He lost his house and everything just recently in the Napa fires in Santa Rosa. Yeah, he's a Facebook friend of mine, and he almost died. He lost everything. The only thing left standing on his whole property is the little chapel and the Mary statue.
Oh,
so, but he's, please pray for Joseph, and we'll talk more about this
after. And I look at people like Joseph Schiamber, and I look at Daniel Mattson, and you know what? Pray for them by name, please. Yeah. I was praying the rosary with a friend this weekend, and I mentioned Daniel Mattson by name, and someone goes, who is that? And I said, he's a man that we are called to pray for because he is speaking out the truth of the abuse and experience that he faced, you know, within the same-sex community, the challenges that he faced now and even today. But this exposure of the community really helps us in how we address and understand. And we'll come back to this a little more.
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Talking a little bit about the continuing fallout to some of the sexual molestation and abuse and even rape that has happened, especially in Hollywood. And one of the stories was Kevin Spacey, the House of Cards star, who has now lost that show and several other things. He's been dropped from that show. It's been canceled. The story was that a 14-year-old boy was molested by Kevin Spacey. Spacey says, hey, I was drunk and...
He
doesn't remember it, but then his tweet, and this is what we've been talking about in the first segment, his tweet said, oh, and by the way, this has caused me to think more about my life, and I'm going to now come out and say I'm going to live as a gay man. And we're like, hold on, what does that have to do? Well, in fact, those two things are actually related, and I think it's important for us to understand that the culture of male homosexuality, let's call it that, the subculture, and it is a subculture. The notion that an older man gets together with a younger man, and often a minor, is very common and very much accepted within that community. A boy with same-sex attraction, most of the time, their first experience is going to be with a man that's much older.
These are known as father-son relationships, right, as you mentioned. They're very common. Even Daniel Mattson, in his book, lays out the different types of same-sex attracted relationships and the dynamic between them. And often it's that they're looking for some sort to fill a void that they're missing. They're looking for something they admire in this sexual partner.
And often that is a result of abuse that they have already experienced as a child. In fact, a 2009 report prepared for a bisexual health summit revealed that 74% of bisexuals had been sexually abused as children. 74%. I suspect that's even probably a low number. As Camille Paglia writes, she's like, I don't know of any that were not abused a kid.
And Camille Paglia, who, for those who don't know, she is a self-proclaimed feminist, incredibly smart, intelligent, PhD level individual who is a self-proclaimed lesbian. And she speaks out against some of the common trends within the LGBTQ community, much to their dismay. But she says, people with same-sex attraction, especially men, have often experienced some sort of sexual abuse. And, you know, she knows that it's unpopular to say, it's not politically correct to say, but she will say it. And here's the deal. Sexually abused individuals struggle with their self-identity, their self-worth. They struggle because they try to work out the very abuse that was done to them. They try to work it out often at a young age, trying to understand what exactly it was. What happened to me? What was this? Maybe I was too young to remember. And, you know, these poor young men, and then they hit this 18-year-old age, and Joseph himself.
Well, or before. They're 14, and right. They're struggling, and they've right. got all the teenage issues, and they've been abused. And now I just want love. I want affection. I want right. affirmation. Where can I find it?
Right. And look at people who have power and money that can help them get places as well.
I mean, that's why the father-son dynamic within the same-sex attracted community is presented as a positive thing. It's presented as a nurturing, loving, kind thing for a man in his 20s, 30s, 40s, sometimes 50s and 60s mm-hmm. coming alongside that 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 18-year-old. And saying, hey, I'm here for you. In fact, Harry Hay is essentially the founder of the American gay movement. His own words, he says, if the parents and friends of gays are truly friends of gays, they would know from their gay kids that the relationship with an older man is precisely what 13, 14, and 15-year-old kids need more than anything else in the world. They present it as something
positive,
that this is what you need. Like, as a 13-year-old, and don't you get hints of this? In the sex education that happens in our schools now, don't you say, hey, if you're 13 years old and you've got, you know, same-sex attraction or you've got some questions about gender, what you need to do is pursue that. Well, who are they going to pursue that? If you're a 13-year-old with same-sex attraction, you've been told to pursue that. Who are you going to pursue it with? You're going to find the 13-year-old and no, you're not. There are a lot of men who are looking to prey on you.
Well,
purposely.
And Joseph even talks about how there are a lot of older men who are willing to play the father role.
Of course.
If that's what you're looking for in order for the gay interaction, sexual interaction.
Another renowned gay activist, Larry Kramer, he wrote this in an opinion piece. He says, in those cases where children do have sex with their homosexual elders, I submit that often, very often, the child desires the activity and perhaps even solicits it, either because of natural curiosity or because he or she is a homosexual and innately knows it. And unlike girls or women forced into rape or traumatized, most gay men have warm memories of their earliest and early sexual encounters. When we share these stories with each other, they are invariably positive ones.
That is absolute crap. That a child is curious, that a child's trying to understand the body, that a child might not understand something. That's the adult's responsibility to put a stop to anything that any way whatsoever crosses the line.
But of course you're right, Timory, but don't you think, knowing what I just said, right? Keep that in your mind. Doesn't that put Kevin Spacey's tweet in a different light? Right? If the same sex attract, these are two guys, Larry Kramer and Harry Hay, who are very strong in the gay movement in this country. These are their explicit words. And so do you think, for example, Kevin Spacey has not been exposed to these ideas? No, of course he has.
Of course
he's
used to it.
And so doesn't it make more sense that he would say, I mean, yeah, okay, I was fooling around, my words, with a 14-year-old, but hey, I mean, it's probably, I'm putting words in his mouth, but I'm just saying, isn't the underlying idea here, hey, I mean, did he really dislike it? I mean, come on, isn't that what we do? I just think it's so insidious, so insidious.
Add another layer of that. If they're over the age of 14 and they're having sex with someone within 10 years of their age, they're above the age of consent, and that's not going to be reported. It's not mandated to be reported if someone knows that something is happening. And that's where you have these blurred lines. And maybe some people think, oh, well, they're of the age of consent. And, you know, I'm within 10 years of their age. So, I mean, I can't get in trouble. I can't get pinned for this. But that's not true. If it's coerced in any way whatsoever, and not that we should even be working on a technicality here, but we need to continue to make sure that minors, young adults, adults, everyone combined has a clear picture and understanding of a really, truly a border in terms of these different topics.
Yeah, I mean, but good luck with that, Timory. I just think that's your, that the 18 thing, I think it's somewhat arbitrary, right? And that the mindset behind it, you have a hard time, apart from a Christian worldview and apart from actual virtue, putting that age of consent thing as your only border. Of course you're right, right? Yeah. Of course we shouldn't be molesting minors.
But for kids to understand that a little bit better.
Yeah, I just think we need something stronger underneath. I just think, like, when you hear guys like George Takei, who was, I think he was Mr. Sulu on Star Trek, okay, and he's like a comedian now. He's pretty funny, at least he thinks he is. But he talks glowingly about his first, quote, gay sexual experience when he was 13. It was a 19-year-old camp counselor. George Takei says, I didn't even know if I was gay at the time. I was just exploring. But he talks about this as a great thing. This was a good thing. It helped him move towards being gay. When you have people like George Takei out there saying things like this, I think it's very tough to argue convincingly, especially in a culture where we've accepted that, you know, love wins, mm-hmm. right? I mean, well, love wins. Well, what about the man-boy love society, which has been actually been quite strong in this culture? Mm-hmm. You know, when it started to take a hit, God, in his grace and irony, the Catholic priest abuse scandal is actually when that started to, when we started to follow it. Nobody was talking about that. So I, on one hand, that was a great service that happened.
Thank God that it was exposed. Yeah. And I'm serious. Those pedophiles.
Yep.
Unbelievably disgusting individuals were exposed, because, you know, I think it's done a lot to help the church in being ahead of the issue now.
Oh, for
in
sure.
The church is, yeah. Not that there isn't abuse, because, gosh, unfortunately, we have faulty individuals, but the church is now prepared for, as shocking as the scandal continues to be in other industries, other fields, that we can address and speak to it.
Ex-gay Robert Lopez, who was raised by his mother and her lesbian partner, had this to say on the topic. He says, in a society soaked in porn, where sexual orientation is discussed openly in front of small children, there will certainly be 12 and 13-year-olds who think they want to have sex and think they are ready for it. And when we discuss gay identity with sixth graders, which is very common, what are we discussing? We're talking about sexual acts. Perhaps we need to stand up and realize that if you're talking about sexual acts with sixth graders, and then they've got 19-year-olds saying, hey, do you want to experiment? What do you think is going to happen? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry, this is a tough topic, but this is the reality. We can't just say, you know, love wins. Love is not winning in this situation.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timory on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Joseph Shambra is a person who has lived with same-sex attraction for most of his life and was into the gay lifestyle for many, many years. And he talks very clearly about it. And I encourage you to check it out. The pain is very real. And he writes this: when I initially entered the gay lifestyle in 1988, he puts gay in quotes, the very first thing that struck me about the whole scene was the massive wall of older, endlessly flattering, and immensely, quote, loving men who met me in that first bar I walked into. At that time, I was 18, completely inexperienced, and after suffering years of alienation and loneliness, including the torturous and embarrassing insults from other boys at school, a large group of masculine and seemingly self-confident men who actually wanted me was like being in heaven. And I just think that's an important mindset to keep in mind. Like, there are a bunch of older men who are reaching out to a bunch of younger men who have been abused, who are searching for answers, who come from a very tough family background or whatever, and they're saying, hey, we'll be there. We'll be there for you. Now, he was 18. Unfortunately, it happens a lot before 18. But even at 18, I mean, how much of this is just men using one? I'd say all of it. All of it is just men using.
It's preying on younger, naive individuals who are vulnerable. This, you know, you're talking about Joseph here, who comes in having had daddy struggles, you know, coming in looking for a father type figure to affirm him. And, you know, he continues to talk about even just some of the statistics, which we don't even have available here in the United States. But a census of data from Canada shows that 26% of men in male same-sex unions, that there's a gap between partners of 10 or more years. So contrast that. That's over 26% of those gay relationships. In contrast, male-female relationships, it's less than 1.6% where there's a 10-year gap. And, you know, you just see this number, and we have to recognize, you guys, there's something that's playing a part in this that is kind of the unspoken, truly the unspoken harm, I think, kind of attacking into this area. And this is something that Joseph himself talks about, something that Daniel Mattson talks about. And that's the impact of pornography and how pornography really does essentially have this subliminal push toward this same-sex interaction, especially with older men and young boys or younger men. You know, it's something that's been lived out in the gay porn video industry for years. It's a very popular, it's a very common. And here's a level of it that people are not talking about. When you engage in any sexual activity, when you watch pornography, your brain is kicking into releasing all the chemicals, hormones, and endorphins. Some of them are chemicals like dopamine, which gives you this pleasure kick. Well, at a certain point, when you've looked at just images, you become accustomed to that dopamine kick and you want more. So you now turn to more graphic images. You now turn toward videos. You turn toward things that are going to give more of a shock and a wow factor. Pornography. That's the reason they're calling it a drug. It's the worst of the drugs because it's a drug within the brain. But what happens is, this is why you're now seeing child pornography is one of the fastest growing industries, because we have become, as a society, so addicted to pornography. We're looking for that next dopamine kick. And this is why you're now seeing acted out upon all the time, young interactions sexually with minors.
The sex industry, the porn industry, is just, it gets more and more unnatural. It just goes farther and farther away from God's intended purpose, right? For the, what we need for happiness and flourishing, the porn industry just takes that, and how far away from that can I get? And so you see just the most unnatural trends in it, right? Initially, the porn industry, like you said, it would have been like a Playboy where, all right, we have some uncovered women. Now it's so far beyond that that we couldn't even mention it on the air. But interestingly, the gay pornography has always been just sort of one step ahead of the nastiness. Even in the 60s, look at some of the titles of the earliest, quote, gay porn movies. My Son, My Lover, Like Father, Like Son, Daddy's Boy. These are some of the titles. It was always sort of that incestuous thing, the father-son thing. And it is always, like you said, you go, you know, I was just reading, unfortunately, I have to do this for research, but I was just reading about some of the research in quotes, Alfred Kinsey did. He's been called the father of the sexual revolution because he released in the 40s, Sexuality in the Human Male, and then in the 50s, Sexuality in the Human Female. And basically, he was a complete pervert. He sexually abused children in his experiments, and he brought in a bunch of people from prisons, sexual abusers, to do research, and then he presented these as findings. Even today, you can go to places like the Kinsey Institute, and he's presented as a sociologist who was a hero in the history of science. It was all corrupt, abuse, misinformation.
I'm sorry, but those are the statues that need to be taken down.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, even stats like the whole 10% of the population are gay, you may have heard that one growing up. It was never true.
No.
That comes from Kinsey. That comes from the group of people that he had in his room that he had handpicked. For anyway, all of that to say, the nastiness that comes out of that, right? He went, the thing, I cannot, literally cannot mention some of the things Kinsey did to himself and others. Because you would throw up. It's so nasty, but it's so, the key is it's so unnatural, right? It's so like, here's the truth, here's goodness, here's beauty. I'm going to go so far away from that to sort of just slap God upside the head. That's what this industry is. That's the roots of this industry. People like Kinsey and then the gay porn of the 60s. It's not something we should be celebrating with our, you know, as parents, you know, you hear these like, well, little Johnny, you know, he's experimenting. No, we protect our kids from sugar and tobacco. We should be protecting our kids from this, which is much, much worse.
Well, and you have pediatricians who are being very vocal and very clear on the topic as a whole, because now is it a surprise that we've entered into the transgender issue that we're facing in this identity crisis for young children that, I'm sorry, is self-imposed by adults, not by young children. Children often don't even fully understand the differences between male and female until they understand a little bit later on. You know, these are just topics that aren't even appropriate to be discussed necessarily with kids. You know, I was just on the phone with my little sister a week ago, and we're sitting there on the phone, and you know what part of the conversation was? And it's, here she is, very young still, in high school. And you know some of her news as we're talking? Did you hear that this happened this week? My heart was literally breaking as she's mentioning some of the things that happened this week that she heard about. This is something that all of these kids are being exposed to. You know, we just did our last show earlier in the week about stress for minors and young adults. Maybe part of it is because they see what's happening in the world and they want to be better. They want to get past that. They don't want to be lost in it. And so when you have pediatricians, thank God for so many of them who are speaking out about this topic. You know, here's one pediatrician. She's a mother of four. She practiced for over 17 years. She's now a main researcher and board member for the American College of Pediatricians, and for the last 3 years has served as president. She's on the board of directors for Alliance of Therapeutic Choices and Scientific Integrity for over 5 years. You know, this woman has an incredible profession as a doctor and on boards and research institutes all over the country and internationally working. And here's someone who's saying that you've all of a sudden seen an increase in these quote unquote gender clinics. You're seeing an increased push within the field for kids to have sexual mutilation done to their sexual organs, you know, and this isn't something for prepubescent children that is healthy in any way. This isn't something that all of a sudden helps them get over their suicidal tendencies or their depression and anxiety. And she even talks about how usually it's adults pressing this agenda on young teenagers.
Yeah, what kid is going to check themselves into a gender clinic? And she writes, she talks about this, that in 2014, there were 24 of these gender clinics, and that was a lot more than there used to be. But 1 year later now, there's over 40 across the nations. And what she's saying is they're basically anti-pediatrics, right? Like pediatricians right. used to work for the health of the children. Now we are actually harming the children. We're actually going exactly opposite. We're violating the Hippocratic Oath by doing harm to the children, by not only affirming them in their desire to be another gender, but then sometimes actually physically changing their bodies. Giving them the puberty blockers, actually mutilating them sometimes. 16-year-olds getting mastectomies, I saw. What? What is happening here?
Do people not realize that some of the harm of this is irreversible? Do they not realize if they suddenly want to have children later on, the way the body has to be cut through scar tissue in order so that you might be able to have sex the way you wanted to? And to possibly even have children, how you have to be sewn back up after every child you have. And then if you want to have sex again or have children, like, your body is being ripped apart and sewn back together over and over again. And some of these choices are irreversible.
It all flows, though, ultimately, unfortunately, from the notion that we can separate sex from childbearing, right? Like, that's the basis of promiscuous sex, but it's also the basis of same-sex action, like homosexuality, right? The notion that homosexuality is okay, if you argue for that, you can't really argue for any of the gender stuff, right? They go completely together. If sex doesn't equal babies, then genders don't matter. And if genders don't matter, you can be whatever you want. That's the logic behind this stuff. And we're just doing such immense damage to our children.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
You know, an interesting perspective still playing on the same topic, Dawn. You know, a well-known actress many years ago spoke out about the sexual abuse taking place in Hollywood. While she didn't come out claiming a name, she spoke to what was happening in an article in The Mirror. Maureen O'Hara, known arguably as one of the most beautiful actresses of her time, I mean, I might even argue ever, was beautiful, acted in Miracle on 34th Street, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, all of these incredible pieces. She spoke out in an interview and talked about how, because she, in her own words, wouldn't let directors, producers kiss and paw her, wouldn't allow them to interact with her, kissing her in the morning at the end of the day, how they would call her names such as a hunk of marble. And they had this view essentially that until she says, quote, "I divorce my husband, give my baby away, and get my name and photograph in all the newspapers," she essentially wasn't going to be enough to them. And she said, "If that's Hollywood's idea of being a woman, I'm ready to quit now." And she spoke out about how, you know, the mindset of Hollywood then is very similar to the mindset of Hollywood now. And how back then, though, women were expected to be quiet as the men were abusing them. Well, guess what? You have men and women today who are also being quiet yet again. And you know what? You're called to speak out and say something. If you are being abused, it needs to be a wake-up call to Hollywood to speak out when there is harm to yourself or others taking place.
It's interesting. She wrote in her little article there that unless I divorce my husband, give my baby away, and get my name and photograph in all the newspapers, I'm not a woman according to Hollywood standards. Essentially, that was I paraphrased that last part. But isn't it Hollywood's, you know, often on the cutting edge, right? Like, you look at what's Hollywood putting out. Well, that's what we'll see culture wide later on. You know, it's basically this propaganda machine that sends out these stories that affect us on an emotional level and help us accept things down the road. And so, you know, I've often made the point that without Will and Grace, for example, we wouldn't have the situation today in accepting same-sex marriage. I just don't think it happens without shows like Will and Grace or now Modern Family presenting the same-sex attracted lifestyle as something that's completely, you know, happy and healthy, and those who oppose it are bigoted jerks, right? That was Will and Grace.
Well, have we mentioned that Will and Grace is back? It's not even something we've talked about on
air right.
yet.
And apparently it feels a bit dated now.
Like,
they're cutting edge stuff that they used to do. I mean, we're past that now, right? I mean, it's no longer, I haven't watched the new one, but I did see a couple of reviews. But it's interesting that in Hollywood, in order for her to be a success, that she had to get rid of the husband, get rid of the baby, and get her name in all of the papers. So what was the message of the sexual revolutionaries come the 50s and the 60s is that, listen, if you want to be a success, that you have to get rid of the husband, you have to get rid of the baby, you have to get your name in the papers, you have to have the sex, money, and the power, and the husband and the babies are what's going to keep you from that. The message was just the same. It was just earlier in Hollywood.
It's pure second wave feminism, being freed of your shackles of fertility. You're being freed of being pinned down by that husband, by that child. That's why we needed birth control at this time, because it was what was getting in the way from you living this free lifestyle to have sex with who you needed to get ahead, to have the body you needed to be that Hollywood actress. You know, I think The View, and we were just talking about dance recently and how, you know, a young girl quitting dance possibly because of, you know, the impact and the pressure put on the body. And, you know, you see these expectations placed on women today truly just ignore the incredible beauty of who a woman is, not what she is, not what her body looks like, but who she is and the incredible gift she has to offer to a society. Whether she is an artist, whether she's really smart, whether she, you know, is a dancer, whether or not she's an accountant, whatever her gift to the church, gift to the community might be, whether she is a mother who's caring for her family. You know, we've told women that they're constantly not enough. And now we've told women for so long that they're not enough, that the primary nurturers within the family are now communicating the same message to teenagers. You know, we just talked last week about how teens are more stressed, young adults are more stressed. It's because they constantly have this view that they're not enough. This plastic surgery attitude that I need to have plastic surgery in order to feel beautiful or self-confident. You know, that mentality is pressured onto the kids in the way they dress, the way they act, every part of their life.
That's exactly right. That's a perfect example, actually. So the plastic surgery mentality is, I need to change me. I need to become someone else.
In order to be happy.
In order for you to accept me.
Or in order for me to be happy. It might not be anything.
Right. I'm gonna be happy when I get famous or when I get the whatever, right? It's not usually a man anymore, it's more like, am I changing my body so that I can get a man? Not likely anymore. But so that I can have a lot of Instagram followers? Yes, quite possibly. So I can get the film deal? Yes, quite possibly, right? I'll change my body for that. But you look at it, it is the mentality that I, in and of myself, as a woman, am not enough. I need to change who I am so that I can gain something, whether it's sex, money, or power, generally, is the three things. Right. So that plastic surgery mentality, hopefully, we can see that if you were a man telling a woman, hey, I'm not interested in you until you get the boob job or whatever, right? Like, that's... Hopefully, you can see that, what a misogynist jerk you are, right? Like, that's not... But here's the thing. You give the exact same message when you tell a woman, I will not either A, have sex with you or marry you or have a relationship with you unless there is some sort of fertility impairment in place. Unless you're inserting some sort of object or you're on the pill or whatever, unless you change your body and become someone other than who you are, I'm not interested. That's the message of the pill. It's an objectifying thing by its very nature. Like contraception by its nature says to a woman, you are not good enough. You in and of yourself must change or you cannot get whatever it is that I'm telling you will make you happy, right? That's always a lie.
Well, and it shows just across the board, there's such a strong sense of insecurity. And it doesn't have to be that you're someone who's on the pill. It doesn't have to be someone that you're on a diet, but there's such a strong sense that if you're a parent, if you're someone in a relationship, if you are just a girl hanging out with a bunch of friends, if you're struggling with insecurity over these topics or others in any way whatsoever, big or small, that changes the way you interact with other people. It hurts other people. It hurts yourself. It hurts your relationships. And so that's something that all of us really, truly do need to work on. Because we're going to see a lot better relationships and a flourishing of ourselves if we can.
Yeah, I think one place to start might be to read John Paul II, who wrote a lot about women, interestingly, at the same time as the second wave feminists are writing their material about, hey, how you do need to get on the pill and gain sex, money, and power. John Paul II is writing about the dignity of women and about feminine genius and about how special women are and what dignity you have. But we need to celebrate that dignity, not tell you you're not good enough, not tell you to change. You have something that is unique to you as a woman, and we're telling you that's you need to change that. So he has, I didn't realize how much good material John Paul II had explicitly written to women. He has a letter to women. He has an apostolic exhortation to women.
Yeah,
he wrote a lot. Love and Responsibility is a lot about women.
That was a huge part of my undergrad. That was my thesis on JP2's work with women.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And you know, you look at it, and he called himself literally the feminist pope.
Rightly
he called
so,
himself
yeah.
the feminist pope. And, you know, I think that women, I love working with women, doing mother-daughter teas and, you know, going to speak with these women, because so often, doesn't matter what age, there are these insecurities. There's this lack of self-identity, this struggling in their faith. And to understand that our Lord Jesus, when he again acted in human history, one of the most wonderful things that he did was that, apart from, of course, our salvation of the human race, again, you know, the redemption of us, one of the most incredible things he did was he elevated the status of women. He spoke alone to women. He confirmed Mary and not just being busy as Martha was and serving everyone, but her place in a place that was normally known as a man's position of being there, listening to him, interacting with the men. You know, this is what is so powerful about Christianity and why many of the early Christians were women, and they were called by their conduct to love their husbands for their salvation, for their conversion, that they would see the example of the women around them. And do we have women today who are willing to have a little egg on their face from the person across from them? To show that I can endure because I care about you and who you are, and that I can be that good example even when it hurts.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Dawn and Timory. Trending. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.